Hello, everybody, and welcome to Start Now, Cry Later, a podcast that is a startup. I am Mariana Barbosa, and I'll be your host on this journey for business ideas, entrepreneurs, startups, financing rounds, and even failures. And today, let's talk investments. And we have something to celebrate. Am I right, André?
Well, in my opinion, yes, we do. But maybe we should leave that for the pundits to reach a final decision on that. But I'll say that we do. You know, if we look at the investment rounds or the investment the money raised by Portuguese founded startups, at least according to our deal room dashboard, we have a new record. Some years ago, namely, I think it was 2018, 2019, we were celebrating something like 450 million euros in investment rounds for Portuguese founded startups. Right now we are, last year we celebrated during a pandemic year and a hard year, something like 435 million. And this year we're only halfway done and we're already celebrating over 600 million euros. So yeah, I think that we should celebrate this, despite with what you shared with me earlier, that Sifted actually did an article saying that early stage founders in Europe are missing out on investment and are struggling to find investment. This does not seem to be the trend in Portugal. And we are not considering something that I found really important, which is some of these companies that I'm actually talking about are not based in Portugal. So the obvious case being OutSystems and Remote, which are two unicorns, and between themselves, we're talking about, they raised something like over 300 million euros, you know, so this is quite good. But both of them have headquarters in the United States. So obviously, maybe this is something to take into consideration, but looking just talking about from the top
depends
of my head.
Depends on the perspective, yeah.
Yeah, obviously, I'm focusing on Portuguese founded startups, which is something that we've been doing, namely when we talk about unicorns, because to this point, we only have one real unicorn that's based in Portugal. This is the hard truth, you know. We have five Portuguese founded unicorns, which is great. It's amazing. I think it's a testimony for the real value of Portuguese entrepreneurs, obviously. But truth be told, only Feedzai is based in Portugal, and they did all their journey without moving headquarters, which is baffling. But even looking, and now let's try to bring some positivity into this, because we are indeed celebrating over 600 million euros in investment by Portuguese founded startups. So if we look just at what Sword Health has raised this year, which is two rounds, 110 million, OutSystems raised 123 million, and Feedzai raised 200 million, this rounds up to something like a little over 430 million euros. This is close to what we did last year, and we are not even talking about Remote, Casafari, Locker, Oscar, PicMed, Hunter, Real Fever, Vault, Jungle AI, and the list goes on, you know. Just looking at the deal room dashboard, anybody can do this, you can actually see that over 25 rounds have not a specific value to that. Pre-seed rounds mostly. So we're talking obviously a lot over 600 million, which is quite amazing. And even if we just consider those who are headquartered in Portugal, I would risk to say that probably we have broken some kind of record, you know. I wouldn't say probably, I would say most certainly we did, you know. So Portuguese founders are indeed maybe an outlier in Europe, and they've been doing it as true outliers, you know, against all expectations somehow. Not our expectations, obviously, we truly believe in these people, but looking at what Nuno Sebastião has been saying about Fidzai's journey and so on, we know that that the European market is not as easy to grow as the North American one and the Asian one. So yeah, this is quite amazing. We should be proud of these values. So yeah, let's celebrate over 600 million euros in investment for Portuguese founded startups. I think it's great, and it's definitely a record. It's since I've been working with startups and at Startup Portugal, this is the biggest value that I've ever seen. I'm not, you are obviously more experienced than I am working with entrepreneurs, so maybe you can share your bits of experience regarding this, but I would say this is a record.
It's a record, I guess.
Yeah, and I'm sure that we'll be breaking the total record for Portuguese founded startups, but just considering the ones that have headquarters in Portugal, if this is the pace that we are moving forward, you know, just keep in mind that we're in August. You know, this is quite amazing that we are a little bit over half of the year, and we already reached this value. So the next 5-4 months will be really exciting to follow, and it will bring only history and more credit to the Portuguese ecosystem. It's definitely a good reason for people to look at what we've been doing here, and obviously it's another reason for why we need to accelerate the growth of our startups, because their contribution to our economy is getting really hard to miss. You know, we're not a country of big corporations anymore, you know, so startups have something to say, and we should support these entrepreneurs.
Before we meet our guest for today's episode, it's time for A Minute in the Clouds by AWS with Marta Souza Monteiro.
Hi, I'm Marta from the AWS Startups team in Portugal. Do you feel like you still have questions around the very basics around Amazon Web Services and how to better utilize all the amazing services that we have? Then you should really be checking out the AWS Startup Lofts. The AWS Startup Lofts, you can go to www.aws.startuplofts.emea.com, is basically a website where you can register on and you'll have access to a bunch of webinars. You have webinars on onboarding into AWS, along to the very basics on machine learning and other topics around technology, but also other topics more around business, hiring, recruitment, and how AWS sets up a very good and important culture within the company that is easily replicable into any startup. Do check this out, AWS Startup Lofts, www.aws.startuplofts.emea.com, and do reach out to me if you have any questions. Thank you.
He was an early employee at Square, where he led the platform security team and built the security infrastructure used by Square to move over 80 billion in annualized volume. Before founding Anchorage, he was security lead at Docker, an open platform for building, shipping, and running distributed applications. Diogo Mónica is the co-founder and president of Anchorage. Anchorage brings the world's most advanced and proven security architecture to cryptocurrency custody to deliver the services institutions expect for a traditional custodian. Please welcome our guest on today's Start Now, Cry Later episode, Diogo Mónica.
Hello, Diogo, and welcome to Start Now, Cry Later. Thank you for being here with us and for your time to tell us about Anchorage and your projects.
Of course. So, thank you so much for having me.
First of all, you founded the very first cryptocurrency federal bank in history. Was this your first idea? And how did that come to you?
Of course. Well, let me tell you that in my career, I did not want to start a bank. That was never part of my ambitions. The solution of creating a bank came out of need, from client demand, and from what we felt was the right thing for the crypto ecosystem and something that was missing in the ecosystem. So maybe I can go a little bit step back, but the idea for Anchorage essentially comes out of need. When I was leading the security team at Docker, after 3 years at Docker, before Docker, I had led the security team at a company called Square. And before Square, I was doing a PhD in Portugal at the Technical University of Lisbon in distributed systems. But while at Docker, clients started reaching out to me for help with cryptocurrency investing. In fact, the first client had lost the passphrase to a $1.5 million Bitcoin wallet, and it was offering me 20% if I could break into it. So that was my introduction to how incredibly sophisticated investors didn't really have the competence to do key management and management of crypto assets, and how unique and different and hard this new asset class is. So that's where the initial instinct came. And then after that, people wanted a regulated solution for these types of assets. And so that's where the idea of Anchorage really comes in, is myself and my co-founder had the perfect Venn diagram of skill set to build this company. And so that's where kind of like the bank comes in. And the bank license was actually attributed to us early in December. So it took us quite a while to get it, 3.5 years from inception to actually be able to get a banking license in the United States.
Mm-hmm. What was your what were your first steps into this business? And what were your main challenges on this?
So the first steps, as I mentioned, I think there's always this founder story where the founder has some aha moment where, you know, there's some light of inspiration that just pops up. In my case, it was just a lot more pedestrian than that. My case was just clients. I was consulting for these funds and crypto funds until I didn't have enough time in my day. I had so many clients on the weekends and afternoons, and I had a full-time job. And so that was the instinct of the universe handed me in the silver platter this Venn diagram of my skill set. So it's not that there's like a brilliant insight. It's just that I start doing this until I realize that there's so many clients that it's worth for us to start a company around this. So that's kind of like where the original idea and where the inception actually comes from. In terms of challenges, I think we had a lot of experience, both myself and my co-founder. We've been working together for 11 years. In fact, mm-hmm. we joined the same week a company called Square in 2011. When I joined Square, we joined together, and then we moved from Square together to Docker. And when we decided to start Anchorage, and I explained this concept, we've been working together for 7 years at that point, every day. And so it was just the right team to go after and tackle this. We always wanted to start a company. We had the right skill sets. We were in the right place. And so we got lucky with all of the inputs coming at the right time. And so difficulties that we've had, I can talk a little bit about that there are the basic components of starting a company that is hard, hiring the first 10 employees, hiring your first engineers, setting the culture from inception. There's all these components that are just important, for which candidly, a lot has been written about. There's so many books about this, so many different types of books that actually explain these difficulties. I think the main thing that they don't explain is how hard each of them are going to be relative to one another, and how much is going to be hard for you. So I don't know, one of the
depends on the founders, or depends on the team.
They're absolutely right. Depends on the founders, depends on the team, their experience. I would say that we knew the basics. I had been an advisor on the board, an investor. I'd been part of early startups. When I joined Square, Square was 40 people. When I left Square, it was over 1,000 people. When I joined Square, it was a Series A company. When I left, it was essentially a publicly traded company. And now it's worth over $100 billion on the public market in the United States. So I had seen fast growth. Same thing for Docker. I joined around 60 employees, 70 employees. And when I left, it was over 350. And so I had seen these transitions. I had advised these transitions. I had invested. I had seen a lot of these. So that component was familiar, even though your company is always unique in a certain way. Like, we knew what the blueprint was for excellency, which is the major advantage and the main advantage of being in Silicon Valley. And I think when we talk about Portugal and we talk about the entrepreneurship elements of Portugal, I think part of the things that are amazing is when you have a set of engineers and founders and risk takers that have experience, not just from a technological perspective and product building perspective, and their unique specific skill set, but the overall experience of what it feels like to be in a great culture of a fast growing company. What does it feel like to scale from 0 to 10 and from like 50 to 100 and from 150 to 1,000? Those things are things that you have to live through them to really have an instinct to what's good and what's not good.
Mm-hmm. And how does it feel to grow a company? You are more than 100 people now. How does it feel to you?
Well, it's one of those things that it's starting to happen where people join the company and I don't quite know who they are and which team they work on. Even though I still make the point of interviewing every single person that comes to Anchorage, I interview so many people that at some point it's easier. And this didn't happen in the beginning of the company. The first 10 people, first 20 people, you know them by name, you know their life story, you know very deeply what's happening. And now at 120 plus, there are people that join that you don't even remember or recall which team they're on. You kind of like remember the face and the name, and, but it's hard. And so that's an interesting thing that ends up happening. So that's both good and bad. Good because I guess growing company is a proxy for success. You shouldn't be growing if your business is not successful in generating more revenue, of course. But on the other end, it also is sad because you always think back to the early moments of starting this company from my living room, when there was just a couple of us around a table drinking LaCroix and just like discussing on a whiteboard what we're going to build and how we're going to build it. And so it's just everything is interesting. It's just a different phase of growth. I am very proud of what we built, and I'm particularly proud of the team that we've assembled because it really is an amazing set of individuals.
Mm-hmm. Since day one, you have been inventing solutions for the future of capital and setting a new standard for crypto finance, you said in your website. You're still working for a small part of society, or you feel that you are preparing to work with a mass public?
What Anchorage does is we are an institutional bank for companies to build products in crypto. That's the basic of it. So we actually only work with institutions, with corporates, with funds. We don't actually do retail directly. And maybe it's worth for me to explain why this is the positioning of Anchorage. So we believe that Anchorage is the portal between traditional finance and crypto. We are a bank in the traditional finance, federally chartered bank, and we have the technology and the integrations needed to work on all these different blockchains in the crypto world. The reason why this is necessary is because before mass consumer adoption happens, companies like PayPal, like Square, these big companies that already have hundreds of millions of consumer relationships like Facebook, they need to be able to build products in the space. And they need thus a regulated partner that has the APIs and the services to do custody, to do buy and sell, to do lending, to do staking, to do governance, all the things that we offer as a package. So that's really what's going to bring adoption, is these companies that already have hundreds of millions of relationships adopting crypto. And so that's what we're here to do. We're here to help companies like Visa, which is a client and partner of Anchorage, that are actually creating products in crypto. That's what's actually going to bring adoption. And then we can talk about why do we want to bring adoption crypto in the first place. And there, what I have to say is that people sometimes believe that crypto is going to replace the traditional financial system. I don't actually believe that. What I believe is that crypto is bringing competition to the traditional financial system, a system that historically has been very insulated from innovation. There is very few other systems in which the incumbents have been around for over 300 years. You know, JPM and BNY Mellon, they were around 300 years ago, and they're still around as the incumbents in the space. So there's this these gatekeepers and this set of barriers of entry that are very high. And crypto is actually leveling the playing field. Everybody can come in. Everybody is bringing can bring competition. And by bringing competition, all of us, you and I, can get better products. So that's the sequencing of events that I believe is important. Crypto is bringing competition to the traditional financial system, not to replace it, but to augment it. And Anchorage is here to allow companies to build these products in crypto and to allow companies to be innovative in this space, not have to build their infrastructure, not having to build their regulatory clarity. So that's the positioning of Anchorage in the ecosystem.
Mm-hmm. So an enabler, a tech enabler, and like a quality stamp or like a validating system to encourage other institutions, traditional ones, to improve their services and their investments?
That's right. Imagine that you are a neobank and you want to continue attracting millennials Millennials have affinity to crypto. So what do? You come to Anchorage, and Anchorage allows you to very easily add a regulated solution that allows your clients to buy and sell Bitcoin and Ethereum and all these other cryptocurrencies. So all of a sudden you have a new business line that is profitable for you. The clients wanted this in the first place. So your millennials won't go somewhere else to have a crypto relationship established. And you were able to allow a set of millions, maybe tens of millions, maybe hundreds of millions of consumers now to have access to the crypto platform. And all of the heavy lifting is being done by Anchorage. And the thing that you need from Anchorage is you need Anchorage to be regulated, because this is money that we're talking about. We're talking about commodities. We're talking about, pieces of value that are being exchanged, in some cases, tens of billions, hundreds of billions of value. So you need regulatory clarity. You need the APIs. You need very secure infrastructure, and you need these services that allow you to actually engage. So that's what we're providing here.
Mm-hmm. Funding a business like this one, yours in the States, helped, or was it the only way to do it right now?
I think it was not the only way to do it, but let me just say that it was incredibly easy to do this in the United States, and I don't know why anybody would make it harder on themselves. We can talk about many things that have happened, if it's pattern matching, but the reality is that I've been lucky enough to work at some very successful companies and have an amazing career that has been have the tailwinds of companies like Square becoming extremely successful and the work that I've done becoming extremely meaningful. And so when you have that, you effectively have this stamp of approval that allows you, when you're trying to fundraise for a company, to bypass a lot of the you are anointed in Silicon Valley by having been part of a successful company and, you know, being a technical founder and having a co-founder that is also a technical founder that was also there that has worked with me. There's just, from a pattern matching perspective, this was effectively perfect for venture capitalists to invest into. So our Series A and raising capital was incredibly easy to do. We actually did it from start to finish, from first email to money wired and bank account, everything in under 4 weeks. Which for people that know fundraising usually takes a little bit longer, but everything end to end in under 4 weeks. And we raised $17 million for our Series A. And then from the moment on, it's just been on the traction and the things that we've actually been able to build, and obviously the excitement around crypto. So I think it's very, very clear. And I think it's worth pointing out, this is obvious in hindsight, and I think a lot of people say this, but it's the market is the most important thing. And then the founders, good founders can't beat a bad market, and good market can support bad founders. So it's actually more important to find an amazing market with amazing tailwinds in a secular growth narrative. And then the special things happen when you find great founders and a great secular trend in a great secular market with tailwinds. So, mm-hmm. I hope that's where we are. And I hope that's what we are. And that seems to be the narrative that definitely our backers seem to believe in. And so that has been very easy for us to raise capital, especially given what we've proven, the growth of Anchorage, the growth of crypto. It's not been an issue.
Mm-hmm. So you are an American company, but you have part of your team in Portugal. Why is that? I imagine because you're Portuguese, but also because Portugal is a great market to recruit, right?
Yes. So primarily the reason is I wanted a different talent pool. In the United States, specifically in Silicon Valley, the average tenure of an engineer at company is under 18 months. 18 months. For a company, this kind of churn is very bad. It's culturally damaging, and is damaging because after 9 months to a year, an engineer is finally productive. And then what do you effectively have them is, on average, you have them on the team for 6 months more. And then you have to train somebody else. And so it's incredibly disruptive. And in Portugal, the average tenure is actually a lot longer. But not only that, the talent is exactly at the same level as the talent in the United States. It is a different pool. And so you are hiring from a different set of pool of talent. And we had a secret weapon or a secret advantage, which is the fact that I grew up in Portugal. It turns out that having a Portuguese founder in a very exciting company like Anchorage working in this space just gives you massive credibility. People understand why this company is opening an office in Portugal. It's opening it for the right reasons, because the founder, did all of his education in Portugal, understands the talent, and they're not there for cheap labor or whatever myth people have in the back of their minds. No, we're here because many reasons, but we want to expand the talent pool. We want people that have average tenure that is longer. We want highly, highly competent engineers, designers, product leaders, etc. And we want a different geographical region. So we wanted Portugal. So we actually, the sun never sets on the Anchorage Empire. We actually always wanted to have engineers. They're able to be on call without being on a call at night and always be able to support our clients, which are institutional clients and thus require 24/7, 365. And if I may, the final component, which is more on a personal basis, but I've always wanted to give back to Portugal. I left Portugal, for my PhD. So I've never actually been able to work in Portugal. In part of the ways that I've tried to contribute in my life is with advice, being an advisor, investing, being angel investor in Portuguese companies, introducing people to the United States, helping them steer in the direction of this bigger market. And now that I started a company, the other thing that I could actually do is create jobs, both benefiting Anchorage because of amazing talents and because of amazing growth and amazing individuals, amazing culture, but also benefiting the country by adding jobs and be able to do that and give back that way. So from a personal perspective, that obviously feels great.
Mm-hmm. So you're a bridge builder.
Yeah, from west to west, right?
Building a business as a big part of uncertainty and building it on this topic, cryptocurrencies, even more, I guess. Which are the main concerns about these markets and building a business in crypto?
I think, the obvious ones is the obvious volatility of the space. It's both a good thing and a bad thing. And when I mean a good thing, number one, it's necessary if you have a very fast growing asset, that volatility is just part of the asset class. The other thing is that you can make money out of volatility. There's a lot of our clients that are institutions that can actually make significant money out of volatility. And that's what they do. And so volatility is not bad for everyone. On the downside, it is harder to run a business that is predictable when what you are, in fact, like Anchorage is, an index bet on all of crypto. We make money from assets under custody. We make money from trades. We make money from settlements. We make money from loans. And so all of those are crypto denominated. And so if crypto goes up, our revenue goes up. If crypto goes down, our revenue goes down. And it's not necessarily one-to-one. And there's many things that we've done to insulate the actual volatility from our business line. And there's many other business lines that we have that are dollar denominated. And there's all these things that we can do. But we do have to consider the fact that the volatility there actually makes the business harder to predict. And so that's one potential one. The other one is that it's inherently a global business. So what's happening in China is actually affecting you on a day-to-day basis. What's happening in Venezuela is affecting you on a daily basis. And so running this inherently global market with players that are international, some of them don't play by the same rules because they're unregulated, and then you have to be regulated because that is what we want to do. We want a regulated, safe infrastructure for investors, but those rules are not a level playing field. People outside of the United States get to do things that people inside the United States do not do. And I think that's a good thing, because what we're going for at Anchorage is longevity and trust. And this is how you build trust, is to take the low and slow approach, take the regulatory friendly approach, take the education to the regulators, even though that sometimes does not allow you to move as fast as you otherwise want. Mm-hmm. So that's another point that is probably worth mentioning. Mm-hmm. And maybe the third point is that crypto is a religion. It is necessary for something like a new type of money to effectively have these religious connotations, to actually spread like it did, and to become a meme that gets spread around the world and something that actually has value. If you think about it, it is, insane. If 13 years ago I told you that there was going to be digital money, money that is native to the internet, that would come and be generated effectively out of nowhere, running in a decentralized system, and there's going to be $2 trillion of US dollar equivalent of market cap of these assets, and that they would be supported on every single country on earth, and there would be liquid investments, they would actually be inflation resistant, that they had all these properties, you would just say that I'm insane. You're not even a visionary, just no, absolutely insane, even though the line is very thin sometimes. But that's the reality of where we're at. And so that's a really interesting thing to think about in terms of like where we are and where we're going. Mm-hmm. So that's something that I think deeply about, is the fact that this is religion And we have our messiah, which is Satoshi Nakamoto. And there's religious wars in between these different cryptocurrencies because that's what they are. And so it's open source, add money to it, and then you create this type of fervor that you don't see anywhere else. The fervor is good because it ensures adoption. This is how it spreads, is people are actually, you know, there's zealots for the cause. On the other end, it obviously creates some uncomfortable behaviors and some portions of the ecosystem that are a little bit too extreme.
And what are you expecting for the next 30 years?
30 years. Wow. I don't think I have plans that are that long lasting. 3 years, maybe. Look, I think it is very clear to everyone. It's very clear that everyone, maybe two things. The space is getting more and better talent. That is a fact. The quality of people that are coming in is increasing. And I don't know of anyone that has delved deep into crypto that is smart and that is accomplished, that has delved even into crypto and that has actually come back out and not said, this is special. This is something that I want to work on. I don't know anybody like that. And so that is amazing because it's kind of like a one-way function where smart people come in and then they stay. And so that's happening, continues happening. The type of projects and quality that is being built is absolutely, absolutely fascinating. So this is the place where I want to be. Over the long run, more adoption we're going to see in the next 3 years. Institutions are here to stay in 2020. They've actually built meaningful roads into the space, meaningful products. And we're seeing in 2021, a lot of those products starting to come out. So regardless of the price volatility of the short term, you're going to see massive, massive inflow of institutions, institutional capital, new products being built, new blockchains succeed. You see Bitcoin's dominance is falling. It is only 40% of the market. Only 4% of the crypto market is now Bitcoin, which is the lowest point that we've been in the past 3 years. I think that will continue, that trend. Bitcoin will never go away. I don't think so. I think it'll always be the conservative store of value, you know, asset that is considered to be safe. And then we have innovation happening elsewhere and all these new blockchains that are coming out that all of them have different utility. But we are seeing this the crypto eating everything in terms of like globbing up parts of the market, globbing up parts of software. This beautiful nature of alignment of incentives with users and allow users to benefit from the growth of social network or a company or whatever it is. This is just a beautiful concept that is very natural to exist because it's Darwinian. It benefits the actual creators. And so I don't think this will ever go back. We'll always have this ethos of crypto. We'll always have more projects that are fundraised and that are created this way and have effectively distribution of tokens or ownership throughout the early participants to incentivize early participants of the system. Mm-hmm. So that's what I see for the next 3 years. Massive inflows, massive adoption, projects, continued growth in terms of talent and more real world use cases that have massive scale for consumers and massive utility built on top of crypto networks.
Mm-hmm. How do you feel about this Trump and China asking regulation for Bitcoin, for example, or Musk tweeting against it? Do you feel this like an opportunity for you to grow or challenging moments or challenge all these structures?
Yeah, I would say that there's a lot of noise in the space. And it goes back to what I mentioned that crypto is, there's the huge component of it, of which it's religiousness in nature. There's a lot of fervor. And since there's a lot of fervor, it's just a perfect target for people to, you know, spread misinformation and get like camps of A or B. And, you know, we have this nonsense narrative around energy consumption of Bitcoin that is the latest and greatest way that people are trying to like, there has been an evolution of people thinking about Bitcoin. First, it was irrelevant. People didn't care about. Then it wasn't backed by anything and didn't have any value. Then it was only used by terrorists and malicious behavior and intent, which is obviously also nonsense. Then finally, once all of the other ones were proven wrong, now finally is, then it was like, it has no actual real world use and distribution and liquidity. And then now it's like this energy consumption, which is also a false narrative, but you know, people are desperate to tech on something because they've missed the boat. And if they don't understand it, they try to kill it. It's always been the instinct of humanity there. So that's something that always happens. There's a lot of noise in the space. As far as regulated is concerned, I think we want regulation. In fact, that's part of the reason why we're a bank. being a bank is not easy, let me tell you. It's a huge burden. It's the highest watermark that you can have in the United States. It would be a lot easier if we could do this business without being a bank, but we can't, because being a bank is what provides you high scrutiny and confidence from clients and allows you to actually be part of the traditional financial system. So I think that is necessary, and we welcome regulation, and we're constantly talking to regulators. And so we're a bank because we believe that the space should be regulated, not that the space should be unregulated. What we want is regulation to take into account how the asset is, instead of just, you know, using the same types of regulations indiscriminately across all of crypto. Crypto does not fit neatly into the bucket. And so we are helping drive that regulation, that change, to make sure that we're not stifling innovation or pushing innovation outside of the United States while still making sure that crypto is being regulated and has oversight.
Mm-hmm. Andre, do you have any questions, or can I skip to the last one?
I do have a question. You were just talking about regulation, and it got me curious, because one thing that we've been discussing here at Startup Portugal is the opportunity of Portugal actually not regulating cryptocurrencies as a way to attract fintech and companies working with cryptocurrencies. What's your take on this?
Well, my take is that it's not that Portugal is not regulating them. Portugal is regulating them. It's the way that Portugal is actually applying the regulation. So let me point out that the main thing that we've seen in the news is that for Portuguese citizens, if they're buying and selling cryptocurrencies, those are effectively being treated as FX, right? Foreign exchange. They're being treated as currencies. You don't have to pay taxes if you buy dollars and then you turn them back to euros, and now you have more euros than what you start with. You're not going to pay taxes on that, right? That is an FX conversion. You didn't actually make money. You converted back and forth. So that's the treatment that is effectively, there's a lot of nuance here. I'm simplifying quite a few things, but that's basically the same treatment. So if you buy and sell Bitcoin and there's appreciation, that's just a currency. You turn US dollar into Bitcoin and then Bitcoin into US dollar, or euro into Bitcoin, Bitcoin into euro. Now you have more euros, but that was not appreciation of your asset. That was just a conversion of the actual currency. And now that's for a very limited, I think this is a good thing, by the way. It's a good thing. It attracts people to Portugal and really shows that we're forward thinking. But if now you're doing your job as to trade cryptocurrency, for example, you are taxed on that. The same way that many shops are taxed on their trades. So there's already regulation in the space to kind of like account for this dynamic of how these actually work. So again, let me point out that it's not that there's no regulation in Portugal. There is regulation in Portugal. It's just that the regulation, the way they were thinking about it, has been friendlier than other countries are thinking about it. And I think there's going to be pressure for homogenization across the Europe. So for all of this to be homogeneous and to actually work the same across Europe, what I hope is that we don't make it too burdensome, because there's clear innovation that is happening. There's quite a few crypto companies in Portugal. If you actually go to Portugal, there's quite a few crypto companies that are growing, they're hiring. So I would hope that we'd actually have the help of the government to, you know, get to a good point. Regulation exists. We need regulation. We always need better regulation. It's a constant iterative process, but that the regulation should not stifle innovation, should not be pushing companies like Anchorage out of Portugal or companies that are crypto out of Portugal. That's the only thing that I think here.
Mm-hmm. I'm good. This was pretty much it.
So the last one is like a circular one. What have you learned all the way by doing things for the first time?
There has been quite a few first times for me at Anchorage. There's maybe I'll talk about like the small, tiny ones, but everybody always told me that being a founder was an exercise in constant repetition. You are telling your story over and over and over and over again. And that's one of those things that when you read in the book, you kind of like intuitively understand. It is obvious, of course you are, but I don't think you ever, ever, ever understand to what extent that is true until you actually go through it. Uh-huh. And
yesterday, related to that, I heard yesterday an expression, process is progress. And it felt like very, very truth because it is.
No, that's absolutely the case. That's absolutely the case. So there's like tiny little things there. And the other thing is that I will point out is that there are so many books that describe so much of what I've been through and that have been so helpful. I have quite amazing advisors, and there's really good books like High Growth Handbook by Yilette Gill and The Score Takes Care of Itself. And there's all of just these Bibles high output management that just black on white tell you how to think about. They don't how to think about running a company and how do you think about a good process and growth and how to deal and tackle problems, how to hire teams, how to structure them, how to grow, how to all of these different things are they're written down. It is amazing that we have such information sharing in this day and age, even for fundraising. You know, not just template decks, but like how to think about the VC mentality, how to get to the VCs, how to get warm intros, how to structure the pitch, how to actually sell to investors, how to sell to employees. Like all these things have been written down. They're massive, massive collections of books that you just have to pick up and read. You don't know which portions of it will be, you know, you'll be good at and bad at. And so you have to like self-select a little bit for what it is. In my case, we are an institutional bank for crypto assets. And so all the consumer side of stuff doesn't really, you know, it's not relevant. So you have to filter that out. But ultimately, I was very surprised when I was doing it that there was always, I could always relate to something that was written. I could always read a book on this topic. I could always ask an advisor for help. And that knowledge is there. The institutional knowledge is there. And I don't think it gets used as much as it should. But it is amazing that many, many things, I would say the large majority of the things that are necessary to start a business or at least to get it to a certain scale, that does not mean that it doesn't require, you know, specific thinking and quite a bit of problem solving and that there's going to be issues that I have that are unique to Anchorage that nobody else have or to my organization or to my culture. That's absolutely the case. But, you know, 80% of it has been written and it's written down black on white. And so that was actually something that was fascinating to understand and see and be able to take advantage of. And this is why I'm quite an avid reader. And it's not just about reading, it's about internalizing it and structuring your learning process in a way that you're actually taking advantage of what you read versus just saying that you read a book. No, can you actually internalize what the book is saying? So you have these mental models and these tool sets on your tool belt that you can actually apply to different situations.
Mm-hmm. Thank you so much, Yo, for being with us.
So after our today's guests, we want you to know how you can start investing in crypto. So André, I asked André to try to find on internet some tips to give you like a roadmap to start investing. André. Yeah,
actually, this is a mix of internet research, which is always dangerous, as we know. You know, that's how conspiracy theories come to be. But also from crowdsourcing, you know, definitely there's a bunch of interest going on around crypto. And fortunately or unfortunately, some of my friends have been caught in this scenario. I would say fortunately because some of them are doing it as I would advise to be done. And some of them are turning into small traders and having a really hard time to deal with the current slump that Bitcoin is going through and dragging all the rest of the cryptocurrencies along. So yeah, fortunately and unfortunately, and fortunately in some sense because they allowed me to compile a little some tips, as you said.
So if I wanted to start to investing in cryptocurrency, how should I start?
So the first thing is to find the trading app of your choice. Obviously, Binance and Coinbase are the most known, but you can just see if some of your fintech services already allow that, such as Revolut. Revolut already mm-hmm. allows you to buy cryptocurrency. True. So that's good. The other thing is to actually check a wallet, a proper one. You know, Binance has a wallet. You can find other wallets to keep it. Some people go do the extra mile and they do buy physical wallets. So these wallets are like we're talking about hard drives that are only focused on registering your cryptocurrency. This is important because if you decide to spend like crazy, you'll be sleeping in a lot of money. So might as well have it on a hard drive via below your mattress, and it's like saving money underneath your mattress, but in a crypto way, I would guess. So yeah, these are the two first steps. Check your wallet, and select the trading service of your choice. I would say you, besides Coinbase, Binance, and Revolut, and yada yada, you can consider Uphold or just go online like I did and type cryptocurrency trading, yada yada yada. You know, you'll get there. So this is the first thing. The other advice that I have goes a little bit. I think it's really much aligned with what we talked with Diogo, which is, well, don't just bet on one horse, you know. So we're living uncertain times, and some horses are doomed to fail, like in startups, you know. So if you are indeed investing in startups, if you're going to go parity or to raise to contribute to some businesses, actually don't contribute just in one and put all of your money in just one, you know. Diversify, I think that's important. Obviously Bitcoin would be the trendsetter, so if you have Bitcoin, I would say that's great, you know, but take into consideration other types of cryptocurrencies, and yeah, maybe think of them as they are created, if they have any technology behind them, you know. So look at Ethereum, which allows you to create blockchain-based solutions. Look at Polkadot or Cardano, which were founded by people who left Ethereum, actually. So all of these cryptocurrencies are based in real technologies with real plans to have a real impact in the world using blockchain technology. Take that into consideration while doing some research, just so you don't jump into some crazy ICO and end up giving money to a scam, you know. So do your due diligence. So diversify, do your due diligence. I think these two are really important. Another one that I really think that's really important, the tip, yeah, that I think that's really important is be prepared to do it, like to go for the long haul, you know. If you are thinking about turning a profit in a couple of months, man, you are here for a ride. You know, it's not going to be easy for a couple of weeks. So consider this as an investment, and as any other investment.
A long-term investment.
Exactly. Yeah. Things take time to pick up, you know. So, for instance, I was talking about Polkadot. I'm not sure if Polkadot has already launched, but they are already doing ICOs. They are already selling their crypto. So yeah, you need to be patient before doing your exit in this case, you know. So be prepared for the long haul. I think that's really important. So the sixth is which is like a 5.1 in reality, is if you're considering doing like the short way, consider a therapist. Yeah, that's something that you should save some money on the side to go into therapy, because it's going to be really stressful, you know. So be prepared for that. And yeah, I think that's it.
Yeah, some of my friends that invest in crypto said to me that you put the money there and you forget the money. So if you want to invest in crypto, you should go like this. Like, you put the money and you don't think more about the money until you see it again. But it takes a long period of time until you go back there.
That's the Zen stretch to crypto for sure, you know. Because if you're doing it in the short way, just taking into consideration the last couple of months, it's, I bet that everybody that has a wallet and is investing in crypto has been going through some hard times. Everyone, probably except Yogu. Yogu is full of confidence, is really sure that things will pick up once again. And yeah, I mean, in terms of just the technology side of it, crypto is promising. More than crypto, blockchain is really promising and what it offers. So the technology side of it really tilts the scales for a positive value, you know. So it's something that you need to consider when investing in crypto. And that's why I was saying, probably in the fourth bullet point of my crypto initiative list, say that looking at what technology is behind every cryptocurrency is really important, because in the end, that's where you are betting on, not only in you becoming rich in a couple of days or a couple of months or whatever, but also supporting real businesses that have really ideas and want to add value to the world. And those that have a real business that are really thought through are the ones that are deemed to be successful. So take that into consideration. And if you're just looking to buy and sell, I would say Binance would be the best application to do so on the... But the downside part would be that you'll be having real-time updates on the value of your cryptocurrencies, and that will be really, really stressful. So yeah, I would say that your friends are right. Just if you have some money saved on the side, which a lot of Portuguese people have at this point. So the news have been saying that never in Portuguese history has been so much money in the bank waiting to something to happen. Well, if you're looking to buy crypto, yeah, take a leap of faith for sure, but be patient and maybe just forget about the money. You know, if it was in the bank doing nothing anyway, who cares? You know, just and good
luck. Start now.
Yeah, start now and cry way later. That's how I would say it.
Yeah. That's all for today. Before we say goodbye, let me thank you for being here with us today. Start Now, Cry Later wouldn't be like this without you. I would like to thank also André Forte and Teresa Fugadella and all the team for being part of this project. If you have any questions, don't hesitate to reach out. We are all ears. That's all for today. We'll be back in 2 weeks. Stay tuned and Start Now, Cry Later.